Yo, check this out. This is Fresh Get Out the China Man with the 2 Live Crew.
Yo, what's up, y'all? It's me, DMC.
What's up, y'all? This is the boy, Master P.
Yo, check us out. Chuck the Public Enemy.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ Yellow from the world's most dangerous group.
What's up? This is DLC.
This is your boy, C-Murder.
This is Jerry Heller, motherfucker.
This is your boy, DJ Paul KOL 365.
Young Dizzy Bomb.
Vice Womp.
Yo, this is DJ Ready Brand.
What up? This is the real Rick Ross. You listen to me on the Murder Master Music Show.
This is a show that shows no limits, broadcast nothing but the real. Interviews with legendary artists, still got love for the underground feel. Rappers with records, revealing addition, and rappers are coming up, get up with all. We needed a platform to fight amazing. This is the show that you need to be on. Hit up UGS for life on the screen and follow with wizard.com. For all of your needs, production and mixing and mastering, grab your shadow to call. Check out the archives and hundreds of shows, plenty of content and you to do. Everything free to download and stream. Oh yeah, we deserve the real.
I'm
talking
about what we brought up, it's we represent. All them chillers on the mic and we show love to all your fans. Motherfuckers wanna hate, do your thing, you keep the focus. Bringing nothing but the rhythm, come and tune into the dopest.
I'm a man-made guy, crazy knocking all you rappers off. It's underground society, it's beauty, it's some lights off. Hip-hop ain't dead, representing for them legends. Rapping mumble rappers, so we ain't sitting on the hips. Two pocket beats, dreaming, thank you for the bliss. It's a murder man.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Murder Master Music Show. This is episode 651. This is a very, very special episode because I'm going to bring out one of my Murder Dog alumni, a guy I look up to who definitely showed me a lot of game, you know what I'm saying, in this hip-hop journalism stuff. But, you know, he's much more than just a hip-hop journalist. He's an author. He's an activist. He's been doing it a long time, a man that wears many hats. I'm talking about Jackson, Mississippi owned Charlie Braxton. Let me bring him on. Charlie, how you doing, brother?
What's up?
Man, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. Really appreciate it. How you been? You been all right?
I've been okay, man, you know, given the circumstances. For your listeners out there, I do want to first take the time to acknowledge the transitioning of my writing partner, my co-author, Jean-Pierre Labatit, from Toulouse, France. He co-authored Gangsta Gumbo with me. He passed about 2 months ago, and the world is definitely missing a great writer and a great human being. So, you know, we want to dedicate this show to him.
Definitely. Definitely. How did you come in contact with him over the years?
He actually reached out to me when he had the idea to do the book. He reached out to me because he was doing the research and he kept running across my articles. And yeah. So he reached out to me and said, hey, you know, I keep running across your articles doing the research on this book on Southern hip hop. And, you know, would you, I said, well, you know, I could, I kept all of my, a lot of my, transcripts from all of my interviews, after my house was burned. So I had a whole lot of, I still have those transcripts. And, he said, well, could you, let's collaborate. And that's how we came about. And it took us about 2 years of researching and writing the book. And Jean-Pierre knew the publishers over there in France. I didn't, you know, I took French in high school, but I barely speak it. I mean, I really, aside from maybe ordering a meal and asking for directions and the time, I've forgotten all my French. But we've been friends ever since. We emailed, corresponded back and forth. Sent each other books, recommended music to one another, and he was very, very up on what was going on in the South. And I'm not talking about mainstream stuff. I'm talking about underground stuff, man.
The good
like,
stuff.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah. You know, so he kept his ear, even in France, he kept his ear to the ground. And it's amazing because you got so many good, you know, people in France who really are into the music more so than some of the people here are. Because some of the people here, bless their souls, you know, they're being programmed by the radio. And we all know the radio ain't bringing forth the real.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So I mean, it was kind of like a meeting of the minds, so to speak, because, you know, I know you love the hip-hop here in the United States, and you know, Jean-Pierre obviously did as well. So it was only a natural collaboration, I imagine. It was a pretty fun experience for you to work with him.
Yeah, it was. And, I mean, dare I toot our own horns, but I think with Gangsta Gumbo, as far as France is concerned, it is the definitive history of Southern hip-hop in French. I don't think there's another one that can touch it.
No. You know, rest in peace, Jean-Pierre. And there's so many guys we're losing in the hip-hop realm. You know, like DJ Ready Red, rest in peace. Fresh Kid Ice. So many guys are passing away, and it's good to see that people are keeping their history alive. You know,
and that's, you know, our task, Scott. You know, that we have to keep this music alive, which is why I'm really grateful for your show, because your show is keeping the music and the musicians alive by giving them a platform to talk to their fans. Because, you know, rap is now being controlled. Mainstream rap is being controlled even more so by corporate America. And I mean, I'm not trying to knock anybody's hustle, you know, because we're all from, you know, from the hood trying to make it. But damn, some of this stuff, man.
Yeah, it's like, what the hell happened to the integrity of the music, you know?
Word, real talk about this
2 years ago. Like, because, you know, back then it was slowly happening, but nowhere near as what it is today. But I never thought in a million years, Charlie, that we would be here 15 years later with the game in this bad a shape. You know, it's insane.
It is. And the sad thing is, you know, the internet has been a blessing and a curse. It's been a blessing for independence because it's given us a way for independent artists to reach a worldwide audience. Prior to that, you know, you had to go through either one of the majors or Selecto or somebody like that to get your music to the global audience. Now you can do it directly. But also as a result, because the record companies, out of their greed, they slowly choke the independent mom-and-pop stores by killing CD medium. So now, you know, where it used to be, I could go in the studio, record a record, press the record, and pop the trunk. Now, think about this now, Scott. When you buy a new car, there are no CD players in it no more.
You got
radio, satellite radio, or regular radio.
Or plug in a USB stick.
Right. Or plug in a USB stick. But, you know, if you're trying to get the music to the masses on a major scale, you know, people in my generation, a lot of people in my generation ain't up on streaming like that. Hell, I got CDs for days in my house, bro. I still have a CD player. You know, I'm up on the streaming.
And a cassette player.
You know what I'm saying? So the people, and then the record companies control all these streaming companies. They control them. Yeah. It's become the new radio. It's become so corporate.
It's a stranglehold.
Like it's a strength. They're back. It's putting them back, these corporate greedy-ass monsters. It's putting them back in the driver's seat. Because then they're underpaying the artists on per stream, and if you're dealing with them, you got to count on them to tell you exactly how many streams you're getting, So you never know if you get, if you, you could be selling maybe 100 million streams and they tell you, oh, you only sold two. And we're only going to pay you a few cents per stream. Whereas back in the day, if I could press up a CD and pop it and pop my trunk, if I sold that CD for $15, I got all $15. Or if I sold it wholesale for $8, I got all $8. So, you know,
yeah,
I
now,
see.
You don't know what you get now.
Exactly. The monsters are back in control.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's going to take some tech-savvy kid to figure out a way to break that.
I noticed, Charlie, I noticed that everything, you know what I'm saying, just started to disappear. Like, you know, as you know, the magazines are no longer relevant. It's all about the hip-hop websites. You can't even write a bio no more. And I want to thank you for that before we go even further, because years ago you told me, Scott, write some bios for artists. And that helped me and my family greatly over the years until artists started writing their own bios. You know what I mean? Once that happened.
They're horrible. And they're horrible,
God.
Son.
Oh, but thank you so much, man, for putting me up on that game early on so I was able to make a little bit of bread off of that, man, because the game is hard as a journalist, man. You got to come up with, you can't just write for a magazine or two. You got to do other things as well in the game. And that really helped out my family, so I appreciate you, brother.
Oh, man, no problem, brother. Come on, man. You know that's what we do, man. We all here trying to make it, man. I would be less than human if I didn't just put you up on game, man.
Real talk, man. Real talk. You know, the homie Sin from France, we got him on the line right now. I want to bring him on, too, as well, because, man, this cat, as you know, is a hip-hop enthusiast also.
Yes, sir,
Sin,
yes,
there, brother.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Hi, Scott. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, Sin, what's up, man?
What's up? It's an honor to have you on the show.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, it was very sad when it happened for Jean-Pierre Labarthe. I was very close to him because we was in the same town, Toulouse. So we see each other many times, and we did reviews together. We did an interview of Scafest Al Capone. We have a lot of things. Even a bio on Scott, on you. Murder Master Music Show, the history, all that. We did the interview together. So it's a very huge loss because Gex the Gamble, I think there was no other book in the world with a content of the down south music and down south history and the history of the black music in the down south. So it's very, very sad with us, him.
Yeah. And his last book, The Devil and the Blues, is an amazing book.
Yeah.
It's an amazing book. I remember when he asked me to write the blurb for it, and he sent me the book in French, and I had to actually translate the book through Google Translator. It took me a long time to, but the book is an amazing book. And I just hope that the publisher continues to keep those books, Jean-Pierre's books, on the marketplace, because he has done black music studies in France a great service, a great service. And it would... Everybody needs to read. Anybody that's interested in black music in America needs to read his, in France, needs to read his book.
Yeah, I took it to Linda, who was a woman with Jean-Pierre, and she maybe would make an editor or see for editors in for publishing the book in English. It was good to translate the three books. I think it can be can be dope to make a traduction and maybe in a American edition. I don't know, maybe.
Okay, that's great. That yeah. sounds good. That's
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
I look forward to that. I look forward to that.
Yeah.
How you been doing, brother?
I'm fine. And we do things a whole lot, but I would talk about your roots too, your history, and I know you grew up in the 60s in the Jackson, Mississippi, in Beer Town. How it was
yeah.
to live here, because you have on one side it has the rock culture like Led Zeppelin, and on the other side you have your own culture like Tyrone Davis or B.B. King in your family.
Well, you know, I grew up, I was born in 1961, and
yeah.
I was born in Macomb, Mississippi, and Macomb, Mississippi was one of the hotbeds for the civil rights movement. And I had people involved in the civil rights movement on both sides, my father's side and my mother's side. As a matter of fact, on my father's side, Hollis Watkins, a member of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which was the organization that Stokely Carmichael, a.k.a. Kwame Ture, and H-Rap Brown, also known as Jameel El-Amin, were leaders in. He was involved in that heavily. On my mother's side, my cousin, Joe Martin, may he rest in peace, was a member of the Confederated organization called COFO. And the church that my mother was a member of the NAACP, and she helped raise money for the civil rights movement by sewing freedom dolls that they sold in New York to raise bail money and stuff like that for some of the civil rights workers. So the struggle for freedom has always been, you know, something that I've been growing up around, and it was instilled in me from a young age. And at the same time, music was instilled in me, because I grew up in Macomb, in an area called Beartown, which was an economically depressed area. It was really a slum. One of the things that I tell people, it was so bad back in the 60s, early 70s, we were the first people to have running water on our street in Beartown. And my grandmother, whom we lived with, she taught me the whole ideal of socialism without even knowing it, by anybody who could come to our house could get water. And she wouldn't charge them a dime. And before that, we had a well, and anybody could come and get water from the well. Our back door, was in our porch, but our back door was always open. So anybody, it didn't matter who you were, you could come get water. And if you needed food, you could come get that. All you had to do was act. You know, so those ideals embedded in me from a young person. But at the same time, I heard blues. I heard jazz coming from the juke joint, Miss Annie's Cafe. And
yeah, I never seen a man cry. I seen a man is very blues rap.
Yeah. You know, Wildlife Society is one of those groups to me that epitomizes the blues in rap music. A lot of Mississippi, a lot of Southern artists. That's what separates
yeah.
us from our northern cousins, is that blues ethos, that blues base, whether it's the ideology of the blues, meaning I'm down, I'm hard, I'm dealing with hard times. Gangster rap is really nothing but the blues, modern day blues, set to a breakbeat. That's all it is.
Yeah.
No.
And the first time you heard of it, the first hip hop song, it was Cold Crush Brothers. It was right in 1979 with your friend Roosevelt Pee Wee.
My dog, you know, dang. Okay. I see. Okay. Yeah, my college roommate was from the Bronx. He's from New York. But he had relatives and he had roots in the South. So came time for him to go to college, they sent him down South to kind of keep him out of trouble, and I guess they didn't like the fact that he was into hip hop. So in the fall of 1979, I'm a funk fan. I'm a hardcore George Clinton funketeer. You know, I'm listening to, Parliament, Funkadelic, Mutiny on the Mothership.
Barcades.
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah, I was listening to the Barcades. You know, all of that. And I'm wearing an afro, bell bottoms, and in walks my roommate. He's got on Gazelle. He's wearing a Puma, jogging outfit, and he's got on shell toe Adidas. So we're looking at each other like, wow. And so his whole thing was, this guy, you're a Bama man, this, that, and the other. You ain't up on game. And then I'm like, yo, hey, put me down. Let me learn. So he starts bringing these Cold Crush tapes, right? And he's playing them, and I'm listening to him, and he's telling me about hip-hop. He's telling me about the Zulu Nation. He's telling me about the Latin Quarters and the Rooftop and the Fever and all of these places and the park. And,
He listened to Fellas Four,
all of those guys. So he put me up on that. And I remember when I first heard Rapper's Delight, when they played it on the radio.
Yeah.
It was in February. And I was like, yo, this is it. And he was like, no, who are these cats? These cats are biting Cass's run. He could not stand Sugar Hill. He thought they were the fakest thing ever.
Yeah, because they were not from the Bronx.
when he found out they were from Jersey, oh man, they might as well have been from out of space then. Like, yo, these cats are biting, and they're not even from New York, let alone the Bronx. They're not even from New York. They fake. But my thing was, bro, it's rap. It's rapped on the radio.
Yeah.
Think about this for a second. Regardless of how you may feel, the rest of the world is being introduced to a culture that was only in New York. And that's why you have to respect it.
Yeah. And you have also a group. Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Yeah.
My bad.
You have also a group called News, an album. America, land of the free and home of the brave, but sadly it was burned in the house. But you have an album. You made an album.
How did you know that?
And also.
Wow. Yep. In college, I took a class on recording. I took music industry recording. That's how I learned so much about the music industry, how it worked, how dirty it was. But my whole thing was rap has to be political, because at the same time when I got to college, I was listening to Gil Scott-Heron. I was listening to The Last Poets. I was listening to Amiri Baraka. I was listening to Haki Armada Booty.
Merazi, crazy album.
Yes, sir.
Marubori.
Rise, Nation Coming. I'm listening to this Nation Time. I'm listening to the Watch Prophets. Now, these were political poets who were pretty much modern rappers of their time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But my thing was...
Evans, the books was crazy at the time, like Francis Quest Welsing or Ivan Fonsachima, Renoko Rashidi, or James Ngonge, and Deuce Kabit Kush.
Right.
Was it never told you in history class? Crazy.
I'm reading all of that in college too.
Stalin Legacy.
My thing in history, we had to record a record. So my thing is, why can't I do that? So I wanted to do something along that lines that was like a rap group with mixing the politics. And this is before I heard Public Enemy. You know, I didn't even know about – this was before I heard The Message. So we put together a group, myself, Rufus Knapp, and a few other people. We came together and formed a group called News, Northeast, West, South. That's what we called it. And we had a song called America, Land Free, Home of the Brave. And I think I can remember some of it. Rat poison, paint peeling, plastic walls and bloody ceilings. Souls go unrested in this rat-infested social, political, metiot, physical hell call hole you call home, I call hell. America, land of the free and home of the brave. Land where, that's how it went down.
That's deep.
And suddenly this album never be released.
Never made it. Never came out. Because, you brought it, you tried to bring it to Selecto Hits. One, they didn't believe in rap. To me, Malico's biggest mistake, and they made some great music. They did not take the rappers in Jackson and Mississippi seriously and never put any of them out. They never put any of them out.
Jackson had always been slept on. If it wasn't for you shedding light on the artists, you know what I'm saying, so many people wouldn't know about them. And I got a Jackson artist on the line right now. I want to bring him on. I'm going to let him introduce himself because I think you know him.
Yes.
Hello, my friend. You there, brother?
Hello.
Brother Braxton, how you doing, sir?
Axton, what's up, Axton?
I knew you would catch my voice as soon as you hear it. How you doing there, sir?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
Man, I am good.
Mental state of mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Mental state of mind.
Exactly. Brother Braxton actually was that, well, like I say, it's my mentor. He actually pulled me out of the mud and actually showed me how everything would go. And, and I've been going ever since, and I thank you, sir.
Oh, you're welcome, brother. You're welcome. I heard that new video snippet on Instagram. I like that, man.
I appreciate it. Now it's my turn. I got Ricky B on that joint from out of New Orleans. You know, Shake for the Hood, Ricky B. I got him on that, and Bigelow from New Orleans.
Okay. See, when you say Bigelow, I keep thinking Ethan Bigelow.
Yeah, it's two of them. It's two of them. I was trying to get both of them on a song. Yeah, but that never actually fell through. But, yeah, that's what I was trying to do, was get both of them together.
Okay.
I guess every state has its Bigelow.
Well, actually does a great job of bridging, you know what I'm saying, in different areas. Like, not only, I mean, much props to you, man. Not only you work with New Orleans, but his group, The League, is so dope. It's got him representing Jackson. It's got Fred Stye representing New York. And then it's got the homie Exclusive representing Jamaica. You know what I'm saying? That's dope as hell that you're able to spread that Jackson, Mississippi sound to all these different places, man. So props to you for doing that.
I learned it from you. You taught me the importance of developing relationships and being genuine. And that's all I ever did was try to be as genuine as I possibly can. So, no, sir. Somebody told me the other day and said, you know, you're a great teacher. I said, every good teacher has to be a good student. And you are my teacher. So I think I've been a good student.
Yeah, I think you have too, brother. Then you're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome, brother.
All right. When did you get involved with, Murder Dog? At what point did you meet Black Dog and everybody?
Okay, yeah, I got a story to tell you about that. Okay, so when I first saw Murder Dog, it had to be around, what, the late 90s? Because I have issues.
I didn't think it was until about 98, but they started, I think, in around 93. If I'm not mistaken,
see,
there was
Black
like a little
Dog
newspaper.
Before Black Dog started Murder Dog, Black Dog used to work at a magazine called 4080. He was one of the photographers. I also worked at 4080, but I never met Black Dog then. I just knew his byline. And when he started Murder Dog, the first time I saw Murder Dog, it was a paper, and E-40 was on the cover. And in there, one of what I really loved about it was he interviewed the artists and let them talk. He didn't interfere with what they were saying by adding his own editorial slant to it. He asked a question, they answered it. And he wrote what they said. So I'd say around 99, I kept saying, I got to get down with this magazine because it's raw. But keep in mind, I was already writing for Vibe. I was writing for The Source and XXL and all these other publications. But I just moved to Jackson in 99. And I was like, man, I got to get down with this magazine. Anybody that's going to put Esham in the magazine, I got to get down. So I think I wrote him, and he called me, but he kept thinking that I was from New York. So I don't think he really wanted to deal with me because, you know, he thought, okay, Source, XXL, these are all New York newspapers, publications. And you know how Black Dog felt about the East Coast at that time. And I said, no, man, I'm in Mississippi, bro. He said, really? And so he said, okay, I'll give you. He said, what do you want to do? I said, look, it's not about the money. Because I don't have that. He said, I don't pay that much. I said, it's not about the money. It's just, it's some dope talent here in Mississippi that people are really sleeping on. And I just want to have the opportunity to let people know what's happening here in Mississippi. And that's what said, okay, I'll give you a column. I called the column Extra Clips, you know, as a double entendre, because, you know, as a journalist, the first thing an editor asks when you're trying to get a job with them is, do you have clips, which are cutouts of something you've already written. But at the same time, on the streets, when you say you got extra clips, that means you got, you know, some extra ammo in case you need it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I just thought that the music was dope. The artist was doing the scene in Jackson at the time was growing. The scene in Mississippi was growing. You had the Gulf Coast with people like Dub G and the KGs and Scorpio. And the Gator Boys and all those cats doing their thing. Then you had Delta Skelter out there in the
Delta Skelter, yes. Yeah. Ice Cold Rappers. Ice Cold Rappers in 1987.
Yep. You had Ice Cold Rappers in Hattiesburg doing their thing. You had SSP doing their thing.
Okay.
North Mississippi. So you had all of these groups doing great music that the world was sleeping on, just literally sleeping on. You know,
Claiming the fame of Ice Cold Rappers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Same. That's as a matter of fact, I talked to DJ Fresh K from iPhone Rappers.
Fresh K. Boogie Boo.
Yeah, I talked to him this week because I went through Hattiesburg on my way to the Gulf Coast. I saw Doug G.
Oh, so,
that weekend too.
There were also MC Smart will write at Benny's USA, and it was from Mississippi
USA,
too.
I don't want to put his government name out there, but yep, I know him very well. As a matter of fact, I used to have a newspaper, a magazine in Hattiesburg called The Informer, and the first story he ever got written on him, I wrote it. He also put out a diss record where he dissed the Two Live Crew.
After.
Yeah,
it was Drops a Bomb.
Because he claimed he never got paid for writing Band in the USA, even though his name is on the
Yeah.
But
he was from Laurel.
He has a record also. I can't think of that. Coming Straight from the South.
Yeah, Straight from the South. 91. On Miami Bass Records.
Yeah. And he was from Laurel, Mississippi.
Laurel, yes.
Matter of fact, did you know Mystical was born in Laurel as well?
Oh, yeah.
Mystical was born in Laurel, but he was raised in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Got a lot of people. You have Double T and Dalton Posse. All them.
Yeah. Double T and the Dalton Posse. Fresh K was
One Coast.
Yeah. Wow, how do you know about all these groups?
Oh, because I'm a fan of dancers and I'm a fan of Jackson Mississippi rap, like WG or the KGs, or True Trifling, Delta Skelter, SSP, Sandman, and a lot of them.
He's like the French J-Dog.
Man of a Rampage, the Renegades.
Yeah,
the first Pen and Pixel cover in Jackson, first Pen and Pixel cover. It was dope.
I had, before my house burned up, I had the last copy.
Yeah, I remember that. Sadly, you lost.
Yeah, I lost it. Yeah. I hate that. Now, the artists don't even have those records. They don't even have those records.
And you did.
You know?
You did for Murder Dogs the classical Jackson Special Report, so you are a big contribution for the city because you was the first to do that. You put on the map Earth from Dirt, Hellbound, Kamakaze, Ixedonly, of course. Evan Boo when he was in a concentration camp. Jack D, of course.
Right.
Jack D. A lot of talent. Resin Bigelow, of course.
That city is so underrated, too, because it should have blew up. You know, it should have been one of them spots that, really got attention. And you were the one that was on the forefront really trying to make that happen, man. I remember that.
Yeah, I really wanted to see it happen because it's so much talent, and these guys actually were genuine brothers and sisters who were living what they were talking about, you know. I just wanted to see them make it so they wouldn't have to do some of the stuff that they were doing. You know, because Jackson, even though it's the capital city, it's predominantly black and it's extremely poor. It's extremely poor.
Yeah.
And you cannot make it on a minimum wage. Well, you can't make it on minimum wage anywhere. But you can't make it on minimum wage out here, bro.
Not a jerk.
Yeah, and Evan, you helped David Banner for a bad deal he had in music, and you was his mentor. Can you tell us about this story when he was in Crooked Letters, and it was a time when Donnie Cross also had a Bad deal with Slabel and from Rust from Dirt. About David Banner case back in the day.
Let me start by saying one of my major I don't know whether I'd call it a contribution, but it's something that I think one of my biggest disappointments and one of my greatest accomplishments, helping him get a deal and mentoring him, but there was a plan that was put in place he followed through with. Exit, are you there?
I'm right here, sir.
All right. The plan was once he got on, he was supposed to put somebody else on. And then that person was supposed to put somebody else on. And that's how we were going to create that scene. The problem was once he got on, he didn't reach back to help put anybody else on.
It's nobody.
And because he didn't do that, and I said that in the book, you know, it set Mississippi back.
It did.
Now, I'm just telling you, I'm not being facetious about it. I'm not being angry. I'm way past all of that. It's just that's the truth. And you can ask anybody from Jackson.
I can test a bit for it. When we all got together for the Murder Dog photo shoot, that was like the biggest form of unification that this city has ever seen. And that was thanks to Brother Braxton. We even had situations popped up that day that actually made it look like it was going to go left field. Because you got rival gangs in this city. And you had vice lords and gangsters in one area, which was literally unheard of. If Banner would have did what he did, was supposed to have done, well, what he said he was going to do, I ain't going to even say supposed to. These words came out of his mouth. This city would be more unified. By him doing what he did, it created a rift in that unification. Now everybody completely think about themselves, everybody in small little groups, and everybody kind of like throat cutting toward the next person trying to eliminate them. So now it's a rat race instead of that unification that Brother Braxton had brought forth to the city. And it's really hurting the music scene here. It done crippled it, to be honest.
Well,
it was the first time, united like that on the photo shootings.
I've kept my mouth shut about this for so long.
We all have.
Just trying to keep, unity down and whatnot. But, I mean, that's what happened. In my opinion, it's what happened. Because the way these record companies work, if you notice, almost every crew brings forth somebody. All right? Look at history. All right? You've got Luke, and Luke brought forth, just by putting him on, he gave us Poison Clan. He gave us... At one point in time, he even put on
my boy Bust Down out of New Orleans, too.
Bust Down, Dungeon Family, the whole thing. You got a flagship act. And then the flagship popped off, and then the flagship brings the other artists on board. Mm-hmm. That's how it worked in the music industry. And if you're in a small town like Jackson, once you get on, you bring your people. That's what hip-hop is about.
Yeah.
That's the way I see it. I can't have influence and power and not use that to help somebody who needs the help, especially when I know them. I couldn't just be in Jackson and have access to national publications and just tell rappers that I see struggling who have the talent Well, I can help you. I'm sorry. You got to get. I can't do that.
Jackson, Mississippi have a same history like New Orleans back in the day. I think it was very East Coast influencer, like a Maya X had a group who called New York ANC in 1934. And
yeah.
In Jacktown, you have the Root Boys or Oxlade and the Frats and French Coast Mafia, Petit Climax or
yeah.
Stuart Stowaways. And they were very into East Coast stuff. And then after it made some conflict with gangster rap or like a Reason Bigelow, who there was a separation between the down south like Mississippi Mafia or
right.
or I think about right. Of course Renegades or what Woodstreet Players.
Let me see if I can explain that for you. Okay.
Yeah.
To me, part of that is class thing. Because, you know, the cats who were, when the music first came down here, all we had was East Coast music. So naturally, you imitate what you know. And then as you become more comfortable with the genre, you start to add your own spin to it. Now, by the 90s, hip-hop had divided in the city between the gangster rappers and the what I like to call the backpack hip-hoppers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You had, and most of those kids who were backpackers by that time, by 98, 99 up in that area, 96 in that area from 96 to 98, most of those guys went to college. They went to Jackson State. They came from middle-class families. They really weren't hood.
Yeah, like David Banner, so.
Right. David Banner grew up in Queens.
Yeah.
You know, and Queens is, even though it's got its rough elements, you know, Banner didn't grow up like that. That's not how he grew up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Kamikaze didn't grow up like that. I've been to both of them houses. They were in the hood, but they weren't hood. Like, you have some people who grow up in the hood, but they don't participate in gang activity. They don't sell drugs. They just do what they school. They go to school, and they try to, you know, get out their way. Now, Dana was all down with the East Coast sound, and he really wasn't into the gangster stuff. He really wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But he went to New York when he was trying to get his record deal off the ground. And I think the way that they treated him when they found out he was from Mississippi, that turned him off against New York. And plus the fact that he really didn't get a lot of respect Mississippi at first doing that East Coast stuff. I remember when I first came to Jackson State and I asked people, do y'all know who Crooked Letters was? Nobody knew him. But when I asked them, do y'all know Wild? Have you heard of Wildlife Society? Yeah, we heard of Wildlife Society. I called Kamikaze. I said, Kamikaze, this is bad. This is horrible. This shows me y'all haven't been doing any kind of work. Because if nobody, you go to Jackson State, Fingerprint goes to Jackson State. And if I come to Jackson, I went to Jackson State. You don't, if you go to school there and they don't know who you are, there's a problem. So I showed them how to organize their first street team. Am I lying, Exit?
Nope, you're telling 100% the truth, sir. I have a contribution to that time because that's when I actually came into Jackson. And by me having street ties but being very lyrical, I didn't fit in nowhere. Went to Chris Carr, who was over the Stew Pot Stowaways. They said I was too street. Went to Mellow T, who's one of my brothers, and he said I was too lyrical. this is kind of where the dirt, mental state of mind, all of that submerged from, because you have people who are in that's out there in the struggle that are lyrical, that actually take pride in their craft, because their craft is their means of escape. So was dead in that era. I can testify for everything Brother Braxton said.
You get also that your group, Mental State of Mind. Mental State of Mind, exit only.
Mental State of Mind grew because everybody that was in Mental State of Mind was rejects from either the street rappers or the backpackers. That's what Mental State of Mind was consist of. It was like, if you did the street rap, then that was cool. If you did the hip hop, that was cool. I was taking anybody who was outcast. I stand for the underdog. That's kind of why I represent the underground like I do, and I am underground, because I stand for the underdog. I have been in that position where everybody rejected us. Brother Braxton was the only one that actually pulled me to the side and sat there and actually talked to me and showed me a way. He showed me what I know now. And I listen. A lot of people don't listen. A lot of people sit there and try to talk while he's talking instead of opening up their ears and receive. I listen. Everything he's saying is 100% factual. A lot of things wasn't revealed because don't nobody want to sound like a hater. No banner got out there, so, you know, everybody just kept their mouth closed, because if you say anything about what's really going on, because we knew him, it sounds like a hater to people who don't know him and just believe what he tells them. So that's why everything has been quiet for so long. And don't get me wrong, I wish him the best in life, but he know what he did wrong. He know exactly what he did wrong. But he has to live with it.
You can't even, I wanted to have him on the show before, you know. I can't even get a hold of him. And I used to interview him all the time in Murder Dog, you know. So it's like, you know, what did I do?
Brother Scott. Brother
know?
Scott, I had a girl run across him at the airport, got right up next to him, and called me. I said, she said, I'm standing next to your boy. I said, who? She said, David Battle. I said, have him the phone. He jumped on the phone. Hey, what's going on? I said, what's up, man? This ain't quickly talked over everything I said and had to go. Quickly. The plane getting ready to leave. They said, I ain't going to be to holler at you. I'm about to holler at you when I get back. He don't want to talk to people who he need to talk to because he knows what he did wrong. But, you know, you can't cry over spilled milk. You got to pull up your bootstraps and keep stepping.
Keep stepping, yeah.
Well, I try not to talk about it because, it's not even painful to me anymore. I'm beyond all that, but I'm writing books. I'm doing my thing. I'm doing what I want to do. I teach a class at a college. I'm happy. This is what I wanted to do anyway.
You can't talk about your books, your poems, it was good to to talk about it.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
You get Cinders Recondel, it's just poems.
Okay, which one do you want to talk about?
Oh, we can talk about Cinders Recondel. You made it poems with a Jerry Wilde introduction.
Yes, Cinders Rekindled. That was my second book. Because, like I said, I've written, before my house caught on fire, I actually had written a book. I actually wrote two books. I wrote a book called Reflections on Black Music from Bebop to Hip Hop and It Don't Stop. And it was a book to kind of connect hip hop to the broader black music continuum. So I showed you how hip-hop related to jazz, how it related to blues, how it related to reggae. And I also talked about how the music industry was structured to exploit hip-hop. And what's interesting is a lot of the stuff, like Scott said, that we talked about, that we see, I saw that coming. the music industry is a capitalist industry, and they don't really care about art or artists.
Yeah.
They care about making money. And when you put money over art, the art always suffers, which is why the best music of this genre comes from the underground, because the underground is not connected to the matrix of the corporate structure. So cats are able to say what they have to say. They tell what's going on in the street, what's going on with politics. And so I wanted to, you know, my mentors in poetry, you know, I'm a child of the Black Arts Movement. Amiri Baraka, Haki Armadabudi, Sonia Sanchez, Nikki Giovanni, those poets are where, you know, I find my aesthetic. Plus, I add hip hop into the mix too. You know, there's blues, there's jazz, there's hip hop. So I try to bring all of that to bear so I can enlighten people who read the poems. You know, I'm not just writing poems to be, you know, for the, you know, writing beautiful pre-poems, although I can do that and I have done it. There's nothing wrong with it. But at the same time, you want to, you want to put poems out that say something about society, that inspires people who are struggling to keep struggling for justice and freedom. Because I know everywhere there are poor people. You know, my heart goes out to them. My heart is with them because I'm poor. You know,
you was influenced by Aza Eliade or James Grange or people like that. I think about like books like Adams, The Altic Ring, and The Shadow of the Sun, or Willa Karashidi, African Presence in Early Asia. It was books that. It was very rooted. Yeah.
Yes, I've got all of those books on my bookshelf right now.
I imagine.
My bookshelf right now, brother. And speaking of, France Fanon, I'm a huge fan of France Fanon's Wretched of the Earth. You know that book?
Yeah. Yeah, I heard of it. Yeah. Also, Stolen Legacy from. George James.
George G. James, yep. That's a great book to read.
And Joe Scabbit Cash, of course.
Right. And you also need to read They Came Before Columbus by Ivan Van Sertima. He has a series of books and Chek Anta Diop, I believe I'm pronouncing his name. The Cultural Unity of Black Africa, Civilization of Barbarism. All of those books need to be read. All of those books, because they tell you the history, you know, not his story, but his story.
Exactly. Yeah. You got also your book Poems in a Haiku Manner at Amber's Among the Ashes with Kalamu Yasalam.
Kalamu Yasalam, who's a great poet, great thinker in terms of music. Richard Wright wrote haikus every day of his life. When he started, from the time he started writing professionally, every day of his life he wrote haiku. And for his birthday, a couple of poets decided for the month of April he was going to write a haiku a day. And I just started writing haiku, and then I just continued for a year and a half. And before you know it, I looked around and I was like, wow. I like doing this. And so I started writing. I decided to put out a book of haikus called Embers Among the Ashes. And, of course, you know, haiku is a Japanese art form that consists of 17 syllables in American form. In the Japanese form, you write the poem and you are able to recite the poem in 17 breaths. Now, the problem with that, they have to be about nature. But I couldn't continue writing poems about nature. I had to write about the struggle. I had to write about blues. I had to critique capitalism. So all of the poems in there, there are nature poems, but they're poems that talk about blues, that talk about great artists, musicians who have passed, and it also poems that critique capitalism. You know, I hope that if you pick it up, if you're into poetry, it's not your Mary Had a Little Lamb type stuff. I don't do that. I write in the tradition of the Black Arts Movement, of which hip hop is to me an extension of. I see it as.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, man. It's real deep. You know, you a man of many talents, Charlie. And it's been an honor and a pleasure to know you over these years, man. I definitely look forward to what you got going on in the future. Do you have any plans, maybe do any more books or anything of that nature?
Yeah, I'm putting out I'm going to do another collection of poems that are already written. I'm just trying to get through with the publisher to get them out. Hopefully they'll be out next year. I've got a collection of essays I've been writing on, I just hadn't put out, called Music and Politics. And it's about how politics and music sort of weave in together, how a lot of stuff that we don't think is political is actually political. Like we talked about how the record companies have a stranglehold now, and they're really trying to squeeze out the independents with this whole streaming thing by paying them and then controlling the. I mean, that's very serious. A lot of artists, and they've even got, they're destroying the album concept now, because now it's all about the single. And it's almost, they're almost turning it back to the 1950s, bro.
Yeah, get that record out as soon as possible. We'll have it on the radio by 5 p.m. You know, some Sam Phillips shit.
Exactly. And you won't get paid, Jack. And you'll just make money off shows. And, oh, by the way, we'll get a piece of that money, too.
Yeah.
With these 360 deals, it's a death nail. It's slavery.
I love the artists like Kay Reno, T-Rock. T-Rock's another one. You know, they've been independent for so long, you know what I'm saying, and they're thriving. You know, they just keep collecting fans over the years and keep building up and building up. And, you know, it's good to see cats actually making it in this type of musical environment, you know.
It is good to see that. It really is. And you know, the good thing about them is they have fan bases. And like I said, the internet has been a blessing and a curse. The blessing is people like, can use the internet to get to his fans directly. But to all artists that are out there, listen to me very carefully. It's important that you not only be on these platform streams, but figure out a way to build your own platform to put your music on and direct your fans to your platform so that you can get the money without the middleman. Cut out the middleman.
Yeah. In Mississippi, you have one DJ who was like Carino. It was DJ Muhammad. Maybe you remember...
DJ Muhammad from the Gulf Coast. Yeah, from the Gulf Coast. Yes. Wow, these are names, brother. These are names. You read Gangsta Gumbo quite well, I see.
For sure.
Yep.
For sure, yes.
Yes, DJ Palmer is one of the pioneers of Gulf Coast hip hop. And a lot of people, it's sad that a lot of people don't know his name. They should, you know, because he is one of those pioneers. He's one of the first rappers out of the Gulf Coast area that I heard. And, you know, wow.
There are a lot of talent in Mississippi, not only in Jackson, but all around. Like in Tupelo, you got SSP, Batesville, but, like Sandman.
Sandman.
Crazy how Gulf Coast, you got Mississippi Dallas Boys.
All of these artists, again, you know, Selecto hits, they were able to get out to the rest of the world through Selecto Hits. But Selecto Hits, you know, again, with the new streaming and whatnot, it's rare that they take out CDs like that. I think they have, they're now involved in streaming services. But Selecto Hits is the shadow of what it once was because the majors have shut that pipeline off. You know, and as much as, you know, the majors don't want to see these artists become successful independently. You know why? Because when that artist steps to them, they can't rip them off.
Yeah.
You know, they already know the game. Plus, they have fan bases. There's no need for an artist to sign to a major label. They're savvy on how to work the internet independent of the majors. You don't need them. You know, if I'm going to put my... Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
if I'm going to put my music on Spotify and all these other, I might as well create my own platform as well. I'm not saying don't put them on there, but make sure you direct them to your website first.
Yeah.
So you,
you got also them. Aberdeen, you got a lot of towns everywhere in Mississippi.
Aberdeen,
D-Towns, D-Town, Villains, Dosebury Stray. It's a shame, like a Soldier Boy never told he was in Batesville, Mississippi, and not in ATL.
Yeah.
He was from Batesville.
He's from Batesville. He really is.
Yeah.
But now, when he talks to people, he rarely mentions Mississippi.
Yeah. As a it was Afro Man, finally, and David Banner. Afro Man became very famous even in Europe and worldwide.
Yeah. Afro Man sat in my living room. I'm going to tell you a story. This is funny. Afro Man sat in my living room, had my whole living room smelling like weed. And we were talking about, you know, the music business. And I gave him a book on the music business. But I was telling him, my old house wasn't that far from an airport called Hawkins Field. And I told him, I said, now, you know, you see that black plane that just landed? He said, yeah. I said, I bet you they got planes like that that's flying dope in the Jackson. And he's like, for real? They got weed over there? Let's go get it. I was like, bro, we can't do that. The police will arrest us. He was serious about going to find the weed. But after that, I gave him a book on the music industry, how to, you know, about publishing and stuff like that. And the next thing I know, he calls and tells me, "Hey man, I'm going independent. Thanks for the advice." Mm-hmm. And he's been independent ever since.
the first Mississippi groups who did really the South and feel it was a Renegades and Man of a Rampage, and also I think about tracks like Dirty Preaching or Chief Prayer of Earth from Dirt. But it was a the very first deep song. We can say deep down south, deep down south.
Well, the thing about Us From Dirt that's very unique is, like Exit said, they were street guys who were very lyrical. You know, and not only that, Us From Dirt influenced a number of young, you'd be surprised, there's an artist by the name of Fifth Child from Jackson, who's, you know, making some waves in the underground. He lives in Texas now. He was influenced by Us From Dirt. David Banner told me that he put Us From Dirt on the Crooked Letters album because they were dope. But he also put them on there because they had street credibility.
Mm-hmm.
They're one of the few groups out of Jackson, that whole mental mind state thing with Exit, those guys, they were lyrical. They knew hip-hop. They understood hip-hop. But they also knew the street.
Mm-hmm.
I met more gangsters through them guys than I probably ever would have met on my own. I'm just being real.
Yeah.
I met some really nice guys. And it should be like, okay, yeah. Okay, you need to watch him, Brother Braxton. He kind of rough.
I'm just telling you the truth.
Yeah.
But
I also got... Yeah. Go ahead.
But the thing is, they influenced Skip Coon, who is another a rapper you need to hear. He's very political, extremely political. Has an album called Miles Garvey. It's on streaming services now. One of my favorite albums that came out that year. So their influence is all over the place. But there's some cats now in Jackson that you need to hear. There's a sister named Vitamin C. What's this, Dollar Black? Who else is new that's out? That's got, I can't think of anybody else right now off the top of my head. I can't think of anybody. Oh, but those are two that stand out in my mind right now. It's getting, you know how it is. It's getting late. But, what else? Anybody? Any other questions?
Oh yeah, about Boo, who was in the Mississippi too, and after he became worldwide, nationwide. Oh, you can tell maybe of him. Boo was it?
Boo was the Jay-Z of Mississippi. Boo was one of those cats who was gangster and lyrical. And Boo, you know, his first album, see, a lot of people call, you know, he used to be called Boo the Boss Player. How he got the term Boo the Boss Player, his first album was Boo. The album was called The Boss Player.
Yeah, I remember
but,
that. Changed
people
to
in
name.
The name. Yeah, people in the street was like, yo, you heard that Boo the Boss Player now? And that's how he became Boo the Boss Player.
Yeah.
Is he still around now? I haven't heard from him in a minute.
Okay, Boo is now, he works, he's an executive over at CTE.
Hmm? Oh, wow.
He's an executive at CTE. He still puts out records. I mean, I think he puts out mixtapes, but he's an executive for CTE. Now, you didn't hear this from me, but this is my opinion. I also believe he might be ghostwriting for Jesus, but that's me. Now, Boo get mad at that. Jesus don't get mad at Boo. You get mad at me because Boo didn't say that, but I believe it because I listened to the recession when Boo first got signed to that label, and I listened to the way Jeezy was rapping prior to, and I'm like, okay, that sounds like something Boo would write. The recession sounds like a record Boo would write. Because
yeah.
Boo was the thing about Jackson and Mississippi hip hop, the gangster music in particular, it had a sense of social commentary. So, yeah, it could talk about all this rough stuff and all of this gangster shit, but it also had stuff that critiqued the system, and it also had a sense of catharsis to it that you didn't get from a lot of, well, the South is about that period, but it was really pronounced in gangster music from Jackson. You know, it wasn't like we sell dope for the sake of selling dope, or we sell dope so we can ball and tell you how much, you know, diamonds and how many cars we got. But it was about the struggle to get out of this shit.
Yeah,
Can I curse?
I think about the lyricist Jack G was inspired by Hisham. Jack G was a very dope lyricist.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, Jack D was the person who actually got me to, because when I first heard, and Jean-Pierre and I, you know, when he, because he loved, you know, what he called the devil shit. And, you know, he loved that. He loved that type of music. Hence the demon and the devil and the blues, or the demon and the blues.
Hellbone. Like Hellbone too.
Hellbone was my boy. Yeah. That was my thing. Bitch, I'm about to blow this motherfucker up, huh? Yeah, that was my jam. Shout out to Dez.
And Dez.
And Disciples and Black. So
flipping that.
But
shit.
Those groups, Jack D was the first person that I heard that was really into that. And he actually made me, you know, because I said, Jackie, you really are into this. Man, Hisham is the man. You need to re-listen to Hisham. And so when I started,
he was the first to listen to Hisham, yes, in Jackson.
And he was the first to really sort of bring that kind of
the red tape.
Yeah, the red tape. But he was the first to bring that acid rap style to Mississippi.
Yeah.
But Jack understood Hisham a lot better than the casual listener. Because if you really listen to Hisham, he's not talking about these demonic images for the sake of talking about demonic images. To him, the devil, the zombies, the zombies were the crackheads.
Yeah.
The devil was American racism.
Oh, yeah.
You know, hell was the ghetto. Hell was the ghetto.
He even called his music modern-day blues. So, yeah.
Exactly. So they're metaphors for real-life shit.
Yeah.
But
we can feel that in Penkira's first solo Jack did. So.
Yep. Painkillers is like a classic to me.
Yeah.
It is it's a classic. It's a classic. It's a classic.
Yeah. Raisin Bigelow, too. Raisin Bigelow. Pure and Campfire.
My favorite Raisin Bigelow album is Unfinished Business. I love that album.
Yeah.
But, like, you talk about Raisin Bigelow, you know, their influences are primarily from Texas. Because they had a fan base in Texas. Reason Bigelow had not just a fan base in Jackson, but they had a big fan base in Texas. Because, you know, they were first on Russell's Big Time label, I believe, when they were the Renegades.
Yeah,
and
right.
They also recorded, the first time I met 20 to Life, Reason Bigelow brought him by my house. First time I met PSK 13. Reason Bigelow brought him by my house.
Yeah.
You know, they
it's
recorded
funny
with
you
a
say
lot
that.
Of
both those groups, I just want to say this real quick. Both 20 to Life and PSK's 13's Reckless Clan got albums coming out here in 2020 or the end of 2019.
Oh,
so
man,
dope.
You know, I'm going to be the first to hear it. Cuz that's a classic. Oh, you know, this is the 20th anniversary of Born Bad, too.
Yeah, that's hard to believe, man. 20 years.
Hard to believe.
That album had Willie D, Ice-T, UGK, classic.
Classic. Classic.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You got also Godfather of Metal Tea was very important in Mississippi too.
Oh yeah, man. Mello to me is, it's a shame that that brother did not get more of a shine. Mello is not only responsible for Wildlife Society, he's also the person behind Children of the Cornbread.
Yeah, exactly.
He writes the hooks for all of those records. Mello T is a hook writer extraordinaire. The man can write you a hook that's going to be a hit, but it's going to be gangster at the same time. He's a genius in that respect. I mean, you sit down and Wildlife Society's album, Jacktown 601, is one of my favorite albums of all time. I like that record so much that I have two copies of that album to this day.
Oh yeah,
I have two copies.
That also. What's with players too? So a lot of talent in Mississippi.
Oh yeah, SSP, another unforgotten group. Dean Town, Rough Draft Thugs. You remember them?
Yeah, I remember that.
Mississippi Mafia.
Yeah.
Mafia. Oh my God.
Sure.
Oh my God. They were huge. They were huge in that. Another Mississippi
Murder.
Yeah. That's a classic.
Yeah.
That is a classic. Yeah.
Man, and all that shit, if you want to buy that now, like the actual copies of that, oh, man, that stuff's so expensive. That stuff
They're
all collector's items nowadays.
And you know what? Somebody, I always get, there was a Japanese collector that came by a record store, and he was looking for Jackson CDs. And every time a collector comes through, you know, everybody eventually tries to get them. The only person I know that may have those records are Charlie. And I'm like, bro, I'm not selling these records. I'm sorry. I'm not doing it. I am not doing it.
Yeah,
I am not.
Yeah.
If I sell them, if I do sell them, I'm going to sell them to a library or something so that people can go see them.
The preservation of them. Yeah.
Preservation of, you know,
some of that
and
stuff,
I'm getting
not many copies at all. I mean, just so scarce. We had EC Illa on the show yesterday, or the day before, and he just pressed up the 25th anniversary of Live from the Ill. He only did 94 copies because it came out in 94. Wow. So that's all that's out there. Some of that stuff, man, is just ridiculously scarce. You know,
very much.
I got so like the South Park Cycle, man. That's one of my favorite CDs. I love that album. I won't get rid of it for nothing. You know.
Yeah.
Even though I know
I can
get $100 for it right now. You know, but I'm keeping that shit.
Dude, and to show you how important this stuff is, if you stream it, that's another dangerous thing.
Huh.
If the record companies decide they don't want you to. Want anybody to hear it, all they got to do is remove it from the computer and that's it. But if I buy the record, I own it. It's mine. It's there forever. Nothing the record company can do to keep me from that record. It's mine. It's in my collection.
Oh. Yeah, you got to get the music and a lot of guys, you know, they don't even have copies of their own albums.
I know.
You know, a lot of people can't even find the original copies of their stuff. So, you know, it's scarce. It's scarce out there. But, Charlie,
it's
man,
scarce.
I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I've been wanting to have you on, man. I really appreciate it. Before we do get out of here, brother, I want to give you the floor, man, if you want to, you know, give any shout-outs to anybody or, you know, it's all yours, fam.
Yeah,
I just want to shout out everybody that's out there that's listening. All my independent artists, keep it real. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep struggling. And again, I want to say rest in peace to Jean-Pierre Labartie. You're gone, but certainly not. Yes. Now, you're gone, but brother, you definitely will not be forgotten. Never.
Yeah.
And thank you, Scott, for doing what you do. Thank you, Sinister, for doing what you're doing over there in France, holding up the music,
Very
both
nice.
Of you. And,
nice.
It, you know, other than that, brother, keep going. And thank you for having me.
Man, huge, huge honor. You know what I'm saying? We will definitely be looking forward to have you on, hopefully again in the future. You take care of yourself, Charlie. We're going to get out of here with one of the songs, you know what I'm saying, that Exit done with the League, you know what I'm saying, from Jackson to Jamaica to Brooklyn. This is We Be the League right here on the Murder Master Music Show. I want to thank our guest, Charlie Braxton. Thank the homie Sin for calling in, Exit for calling in. We'll see you guys real soon.
Son, boy, dead again. Okay.
Spell on you, bashing these bars how I want to.